This is Bristol, and you are listening to a podcast from the Bristol Confringe reading series.
Ladies, gentlemen, persons of indeterminate gender, clockwork automatons, and tentacled beings from beyond the stars, can I have your attention, please? First of all, a reminder, as we've had several more people come in fabulous costumes. If you do want to enter the cosplay contest, we'll be announcing the results of that at 10:15 tonight. And if you've come as a character from the book, do come and let us know so that we can judge you accordingly. We won't get the authors to say anything, I promise. One little announcement. If you've enjoyed some of the stories that you're hearing tonight, we do have a regular monthly series of readings of science fiction and fantasy writers, which takes place at the Shakespeare Tavern, down by the docks, around the back of the Arnolfini. The next one is going to be on April the 14th, and that's going to be a flash fiction thing. So there will be, I think, 8 people altogether reading very short stories. Well worth coming along to, and you can find details of that on the BristolCon website, which is bristolcon.org. It is now time for our final performance of the night, which will be a dramatisation of the story Artifice Perdu by Mr. Peter Sutton. Pete will be narrating the story, and the primary cast, we will have Scott Lewis playing Mr. Merriweather, we will have Duncan here playing Mr. Pearson, we will have Claire playing a sailor, and I'm told we need a volunteer from the audience to take the part of a rude labourer from Bristol. When I say a rude labourer, you don't have to say naughty words. You just have to carry bricks or something like that. It's only a couple of lines. Anybody want to volunteer to take part? All right. So I think Ken has just been volunteered. Right. Well, if you would like to take the stage, ladies and gentlemen, we shall get on with the performance.
Its hand lay upon the trembling bird. It combed the feathers back to reveal the net of thin golden wires that covered the bird's body. A map of the pigeon's nervous system led circuitously to the golden cap covering its head. Another bird flew past and its head followed, jerking in small increments like the second hand on a clock. The roof space was cramped and dark and smelled of pigeon, but the space suited it. It found it could work in peace.
So, what did you make of the cathedral, Merriweather?
I have to say, Mr. Pearson, I didn't like it at all. I felt like it was watching me, somehow. I thought I saw someone on the roof at one point, but I can't think what anyone would be doing up there.
On a day as windy as today, inconceivable.
It's proper queer, the cathedral. I bet there are plenty of stories about that building if you knew to ask.
I know it's a queer story. Not about the cathedral, mind. There was this wreck in the Bristol Channel Sea some years past. A French steamship piloted by automatons, and sorcerer's fancies it was. Afterwards, odd tracks were seen upon the mud. Something crawled from that wreckage before any man set eyes upon it. Something that were never found. It was a rum occurrence too. A ship like that foundering on a clear night.
Strange things in the darkness. We've seen strange things at the cathedral.
What sort of strange things?
'Tis said that a hunched over creature lives in the belfries. I seen it on the roof catching birds when we was working on the nave.
Hunched over, a man with a deformity.
'Tain't a man that climbs those walls.
You best leave well alone.
There's nothing wrong with the cathedral that my new towers won't correct. And as to hunchbacks in the belfry, utter poppycock, I say. Superstitious nothings.
Well, I can't help feeling there is something queer about it. I'm not keen to go up on that roof tomorrow.
You've never been afraid of heights before.
No, Mr. Pearson. I'm not afraid now. I have this uncanny sense that something's going to go wrong.
Stuff and nonsense, Merriweather. There is no such thing as premonition. You are merely trying to get out of an honest day's work. No, I won't hear any more of this superstitious twaddle. We will complete the job we are here to do and return to London on Wednesday. One thing, though.
What's that?
I found this pile of bits and bobs at the bottom of the walls this afternoon. What do you make of it?
Perhaps a bird has been collecting shiny things.
Well, that could explain it, Merriweather. Damned odd, though.
It opened its hand and the bird flapped away, tossed upon the wind like a discarded piece of paper. Below it, two men briefly caught its attention. before its awareness jumped into that under the bird in flight.
All right, Merryweather. Sure you haven't developed a sudden fear of heights? At least the wind's dropped a bit.
The two men split up and went about their different tasks. Merryweather felt chilled, and from more than the inclement weather. On more than one occasion, he glanced up to see Pearson absorbed in his work, and no sign of another soul, although he constantly felt like he was being watched. He came across a small hatchway, and felt an instant and acute aversion to it. It seemed rather plain, well used even. However, it drew his eye fearfully, and he fancied it exuded malevolence. It filled him with disgust, partly as his own superstitious weakness, but also from the spattering of pigeon shit around it. He became convinced that if he glanced away from it, it would open, and some verminous horror would spring forth. His glances across the hatch grew ever more frequent as he got closer.
Sir?
Yes?
Perhaps it would work better if you were to do this side. I can do over there.
Whatever do you mean, Merryweather? I've apportioned our task for utmost efficiency. Is there a problem?
Not as such, sir, but I have a bad feeling about the area I'm doing.
Stuff and nonsense, Merryweather. A bad feeling? Indeed. Stop being such a ninny and get on with your work.
Yes, sir.
As he worked, he glanced over at Pearson, and to his horror, took in the fact that the hatch was gaping open, like a portal to some shadowed hell. There was a soft scuff behind Merryweather, like metal on stone, and as he spun to see what it was, he felt a sharp stabbing pain in his leg. Looking down, he spied a small, hunched, golden figure, a curl of steam escaping from its cold and human lips. A slow numbness spread from his leg, like a trickle of cold water inside his skin. He took a tiny step backwards and tried to raise his hands to ward off the thing that stood before his unbelieving eyes as a strangled croak came out of his mouth. He was dimly aware that he had fallen to his knees, panicking but unable to flee, filled with a deep, dark dread of what was going to happen next, praying to lose consciousness and not have to experience it. Had Pearson noticed? Was rescue possible? The last thing he was conscious of was a flurry of wings beating around him as a crowd of pigeons exploded from the hatch as he toppled slowly sideways.
Merryweather? Merryweather?
Merryweather sat in the belfry, pulling a glove over his hand to hide the golden threads that covered it. The golden cap was cold upon his head, beneath the hat he wore to conceal it, but he had ceased to care about hot and cold. He ceased to care about anything except pleasing it, the small, hunchback creature that sat repairing a dog which was missing some of its delicate machinery. The golden cap was off to one side, and its hand probed deep inside the dog's skull, occasionally placing a new cog or spring where some had come loose. It glanced at its newest acquisition and expressed pleasure with a small, burbling toot like a steam whistle. Merryweather stood, fastened a high-collared cloak around his shoulders. He had work to do. The cosy interior of the hatchet was calling. Gypsies, itinerants, and other folk who would not be missed would be his company until it had all the tools it needed. It paused in its work whilst it watched him leave. It looked around the roof space. It's going to need somewhere larger pretty soon.
So just before we turn the music back on again, Joe and I would like to do a very quick presentation and a very deep and heartfelt thank you
yes.
to Cheryl. Come over here, Cheryl.
Come here. Big round of applause for Cheryl.
As those of you who came to the book launch for Airship Shape and Bristol Fashion will already be aware, this is our first print edition. It's Wizards Tower's first print edition. It's been a terrific learning curve, I think were the words you used. It hasn't been easy, but it has been fun. And Airship Shape and Bristol Fashion was, it was Cheryl's idea to do steampunk, and we owe thanks to a great many other people as well, obviously, but it certainly never would have happened if not for her.
No, so we've got a little thing. We suggested flowers, but we thought that this was slightly more up your alley. Knew you'd do that. So thank you.
Cheese.
It's a big round of applause for Cheryl, everybody.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you very much, everybody. There's nothing I enjoy more than producing good books, and this is a very good book, so please go and tell all your friends about it and sell lots of copies, and then we can make more of them. Thank you.
Okay, there's going to be some music at 9:30 from Cala Pavonis, but in the meantime, just eat and chat and drink. There will be cake in a minute. We will have free cake up the back if we can acquire a knife off the knife kitchen staff, courtesy of Pat, who is sitting in the middle there. So go on, Pat, give us all a wave and we say thank you for the cake. So round of applause for Pat, please, for the free cake. And it is a work of art, so come and see it before we cut it up. Right, but in the meantime, just have a nice time. All right, bye.
This reading took place at the Airship Ball, which we held at the Folk House in Bristol. The ball was in celebration of the launch of the book Airship Shape and Bristol Fashion, an anthology of steampunk stories set in Bristol, published by Wizard's Tower Press with the collaboration of the Bristol Con Foundation.